And joining us today, we're going to talk Libertarian Party and a guy who is also one of our Kalispell City Council members, Sid Dowd. And Sid, you have brought a special guest with you today.
I have. Once again, thanks for having me on, John and Robin.
Mm-hmm.
I have a special guest with me, Mr. Joe Bishop Henchman, who is the chair of the Libertarian Party nationally.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good to have you with
Great
us
to be with
today.
You.
So we won't talk about the city council today. We'll really focus on the Libertarian Party. Talk with us a little bit about how you see the campaigns all going along here as we're, 3 weeks away from Election Day?
Well, a lot of Americans want another choice, and we're aiming to give it to them. And, you know, after president, where nothing seems to change, the policy seems to be getting worse, the partisanship seems to be getting worse. We're at the federal, state, and local levels offering candidates that will be a different voice at the decision-making table.
How do you get away from the notion that any vote for a Libertarian Party candidate is going to take away a vote for either a Democrat or a Republican?
Well, it's on us to demonstrate that it's more than that, that we're out to actually elect people that want to do significant change, advance freedom, advance liberty, and be a watchdog for spending and other important priorities there. And honestly, it's looking at elected officials like Sid, who are doing a great job. It's an example of what libertarians can do if we're allowed to be at the table and hold all the others accountable.
I want to maybe, if we could, since we have you with us, Joe, and talk a little bit about things from a national perspective here for just a minute.
Sure.
Away from the philosophies and so on, let's get down to the actual. First of all, let's talk about the Supreme Court nominee that's in front of the Judiciary Committee right now. Where do libertarians stand on that? Because you don't have a seat on that committee.
We don't have a seat on the committee. Our view is that justices should be holding laws accountable. I mean, it's why we have a Supreme Court, which is to evaluate laws as to their constitutionality and strike them down when they cross that line. And I don't know, it seems like a lot of Democrats today don't think the court should be in that business, that if it passes Congress, then that's good enough and it should never be struck down. That's certainly not our perspective. And then a lot of Republicans only really want to do that on certain things. So if it's anything to do with social issues, maybe they're okay with it getting struck down. But if it's an economic issue, they want Congress to have the last say, and we certainly don't agree with them there.
So as far as Amy Coney Barrett is concerned, what does the libertarian stand on her?
Oh, I don't know if there's one libertarian stand. You know, there's an old saying, you get two libertarians in a room and you'll get five opinions. But, you know, she's certainly very qualified, and, you know, the president gets to nominate justices. I don't know, you know, if I was a senator, I don't know how I would vote on that one. But, just from how it looks like it's not going to be a hypothetical thing, that she's probably going to be joining the court.
I want to move on to a couple of other issues that are up, and one of them is the Affordable Care Act. What is the Libertarian's position on that?
Well, it's the law was passed with the promise that it would reduce costs and make everything easier and simplified and make healthcare more affordable and more available. And while there are examples of people who are probably better off because of it, it hasn't delivered on all of those promises, not even close. And I think fundamentally it was the people who wrote that law, they thought the problem that needed to be solved was access to the healthcare system, when really the problem is costs and pricing. What most Americans worry about is having to go to the hospital and then being hit with a $100,000 hospital bill that insurance doesn't cover, and then being forced into bankruptcy. Wow. And the law should have been written to address that problem and solve that problem. It totally ignored it. And that's why healthcare costs continue to grow by double-digit percentages every year, because we don't have a healthcare system that is focused on providing services to patients. It's not patient-centered. It's hospital-centered. It's doctor-centered. It's pharmaceutical company-centered. It's insurance company-centered. And those are the clients, and that's what's driving up the cost spiral right now. So probably start over completely. And I know the Republicans tried to do that, but they didn't really have any earthly idea where they wanted to go with it. Whereas libertarians, we would start pulling back these regulations, pulling back the laws that say you can't offer competing services, you know, nurse practitioners, repeal laws preventing them from providing services, repeal laws that restrict how quickly medicines that are being sold overseas can be put on the market in the United States. So pretty fundamental change with the main focus on increasing access and reducing costs.
Well, where the rubber meets the road, at least in this campaign, is pre-existing conditions. Where are you with that?
Well, I think there isn't an American in the country that doesn't want people with pre-existing conditions covered. As you said, it comes down to how you do it. And that's the great thing about a focus on reducing costs, is that if we're able to bring the cost down for healthcare for everybody, that makes it a lot easier to care for people with pre-existing conditions. If you continue under the current rubric where costs are gigantic, people are paying, you know, premiums of hundreds or thousands of dollars a month, and the costs are going up every year, and it's tied to employment. So if you're not working for a full-time job, you can't get health insurance. Under that system, it's almost impossible to solve the pre-existing condition problem. So you almost need fundamental reform of the healthcare system in order to make sure that people with pre-existing conditions are covered adequately.
We're real lucky to get a great conversation in here. I'm sorry, Sid, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, the thing that scares me the most about the healthcare in the United States is if I go to the doctor, I don't know how much it's going to cost me. I find out after the fact. And that's one thing that I know that libertarians really strive for, is to have the cost for services published so you can shop around and you can have hospitals and doctors compete for your business. I think that single thing would help drive costs down. And, you know, that's something that scares me a lot. I mean, if I go to the hospital, if I go to the doctor with a problem, I don't know how much it's going to cost me until after I get services done.
Well, you know,
almost a joke of, you know, when I went in for, I had to get my, get major surgery done. And, you know, I was joking. It was almost a joke when I was asking, well, how much will this cost? And the attitude was like, you're fully insured. What is it? Why do you care what it costs? But everybody has that attitude. And because of that, that's why we have these cost problems.
The problem is, though, when you have them, you're having a heart attack, you can't exactly shop around.
That's fair.
That's fair. Yeah. But when you're having a good example of this that actually works is if you look at LASIK surgery, which isn't covered by most insurance, a little bit now, but, you know, years before it was not. And that's a very regulated cost. You can shop around for how much it's going to cost you, and you can pick the doctor that you want to go to, whether it's based on quality or cost.
Okay, and we're
for
just
those emergency situations you're talking about with the healthcare. Mm-hmm. That is really what insurance should be. With the heart attack, that is really what insurance should be focused on. Yeah. Is the, you know, the rare things that might happen that you want to be prepared for. It shouldn't be for paying every single cost at 100% out of pocket.
Okay, now when I was a kid, my dad bought insurance because of and the insurance in those days was designed to cover everything. It was so the homeowner knew that if his family got sick, he had this insurance policy that covered it. It wasn't this 80% deductible, this, that, and the other thing. And now everybody is kind of like standing on quicksand. You don't know where you stand because it's usual and customary charges. And who decides that? The insurance companies. And so can the free market solve this problem is the question.
Well, we really haven't given it a chance in a long time. And as Sid mentioned, in areas of healthcare where we don't have domination by insurance companies and hospitals and the government, areas like LASIK surgery, dental care, pet healthcare, we've got a functioning market where costs are not out of control, and we do have kind of the best technology and the best stuff out there to solve problems.
Yeah, and you know, when we're talking about insurance, does it make any sense at all to have a state boundary be an insurance company's boundary? I mean, let insurance companies nationwide compete with each other, bring the cost down.
Oh, we're really lucky here today. We have Montana's Libertarian Party Chair, Sid Dowd, and we have the National Libertarian Party Chair with us, Joe Bishop Henchman. We thank both of you so much for being here. I want to continue with this discussion, if I could, because, you know, what I'm hearing here is kind of like a wish list of what most of us wish we could see happen, yet it ain't happening.
Yeah, how do we get there from here,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, it's like my dad used to say, if you can't get there from here, you got to go somewhere else to start.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say,
you know, I joke about 80-20 issues. That's what I call them, because they're the issues that 80% of Americans actually agree with libertarians on, but they're not being delivered by the Democrats and Republicans. So you ask, how do we get from here to there? How do we get from the current partisanship where nothing's being solved to, you know, where we're actually addressing these fundamental problems that seem never to get resolved? Well, you know, there's an old saying, first step is stop digging. So stop voting for the same people every election who promise stuff and don't deliver. So I'm hoping listeners will take a look at libertarian candidates across the board there. Go ahead, Sid.
No, that you've pretty much echoed exactly what I was going to say, Joe. Thanks.
All right. Let's see. I want to move over to Mason, a few more issues here and see where you guys stand on it. Let's move over to, we've talked about the Affordable Care Act, we've talked about insurance, we've talked about a lot of this stuff. How about the Second Amendment? Where are you guys on that one?
Do you want me to go, Joe?
Why don't you go? My answer will be very short. You might have a better one.
mine's pretty short, too. I mean, it shall not be infringed. That's pretty self-explanatory. I don't think there should be any weapons ban laws at all. And in fact, why do we have an agency that polices up legal items? So we have an entire agency that focuses on alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, three legal items, right? So why can't that be handled by the regular federal, police? Anyway, you know, no weapons restrictions. I would strike down every weapon law that has been put in the books because it infringes on your right to bear arms.
Well, what about automatic weapons, you know?
Military-style weapons.
Yeah.
If you can afford them, you can own them.
Yeah, so, you know, what you have is the Wild West all of a sudden, you know. People breaking into factions, and you don't want to get caught in the crossfire.
Well, you know, that's the fear. The dystopian movies that we see out there. But, you know, before we had any weapons restrictions, we didn't have people, acting in that manner. No matter how well armed you are, you're no match for our government with the military spending we have today. So I'm not real sure what people are concerned about there. The fact is that you have lower crime rates in areas where people are more armed, like Montana. We have a pretty low per capita, you know, crime rate. So I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where people push on that, and I understand that this isn't popular with some aspects of our community here. But famous saying by Mark Twain and armed society is a polite society. That I really believe in that.
Well,
I live in Washington, D.C., where owning firearms is effectively illegal. It's effectively against the law. We still have a lot of gun deaths happening all the time in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, a couple of months ago, we had that big protest that went violent near the White House. And the attitude of the police force was basically to abandon whole neighborhoods and kind of, you know, pull together in a certain place, but leave everybody else kind of on their own to defend themselves. And we've seen this before. I'm originally from Southern California, where in the LA riots, the police had to basically abandon whole neighborhoods to the small businesses, and you know, you basically defend yourself. And you had Korean grocery owners getting up on roofs with rifles to defend their businesses from rioters. And, you know, I bet they were glad they had access to, quote-unquote, automatic weapons in order to be able to defend themselves in those situations.
Well, now we have a situation where we've got some paramilitary militia groups out there. I mean, my goodness, look what's happening in Portland, Oregon. Look what's happening in Seattle and in Chicago and other cities. Also, we had a situation, the FBI uncovered a plot to essentially execute the governor of Michigan.
The bad guys.
Yeah. You know, how do we deal with that?
Well, all those places you mentioned have some of the most or heaviest gun laws in the nation, right? So the gun laws aren't stopping this from happening. It's really, when it boils down to it, it's the people and the culture that stops it.
Well, all right. I'll stop you here just a minute here.
Okay.
And just first of all, I used to live in Washington State, and I can tell you that it's easier to get a concealed weapon permit in Washington than it is in Montana. And I can't speak about Oregon, Robin. You used to live there.
Mm-hmm. I'm not certain. I never tried to get one.
But the one thing is that people are coming out of Washington, Vancouver, Washington, which is right on the border there, going into Portland. In fact, that's where the Proud Boys are from, Vancouver, Washington, not from Portland, Oregon. So I don't know if that complicates your thoughts there at all on that.
It really doesn't, because, you know, the threat really isn't the access to weapons. I mean, the access to weapons is you know, fairly good everywhere in the U.S., but the problem is that these I don't know, violent political type groups. I mean, that's more of a cultural problem than it is a weapons problem. I mean, even without weapons, if you go all the way to nobody owns a weapon, you have people driving through crowds of people with a truck, right? I mean, it's more of a cultural problem than it is a weapon issue.
We have given so much power to government that every election to a lot of people seems like do or die. It's 100% or 0%. It's a zero-sum game. And, you know, if my side doesn't win this election, then everything's ruined for the next term in office, or vice versa. So increasingly, it seems every election, more and more people have that attitude. And it's not necessarily a mistaken one, given how much authority we've given to what the president can do, what Congress can do, over all of the decisions that we make on a daily basis. So I think that's what's helped. Well, that's been contributing to this. Well, you know, we don't have any choice but to create this separate zone in Portland, or we don't have any choice but to, you know, start burning down things, or we don't have any choice but to do this kind of stuff, because people feel like when they vote, it's not resulting in change. Or when they vote, it's, you know, and their side doesn't win, then it's pointless to try to continue working through the process.
Joe, you just did a wonderful job of concluding. I think you just did a wonderful job of concluding our discussion today. Thank you for that. Really, you summarized it very well. This has been a great conversation, and one that I've been looking forward to having for a while. Sid Dowd, always a pleasure. And Joe Bishop Hinchman, you're welcome anytime. Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care now.